I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Orange Amplifiers and their Tremlord 30 guitar app. A very Orange take on a classic, cool 1950s amplifier. It's a 30-watt 112 all-valve guitar combo with 2-foot switchable valve-driven tremolo speeds and 2-spring reverb tank. Everything you need to deliver high-quality, vintage-inspired, boutique-esque tones in the near-indestructible chassis of an Orange amplifier. Harking back to tremolos made famous in the 50s, the 12AX7 valve-powered tremolo oozes versatility and depth. With crystal clear clarity and buckets of headroom, the Orange Tremlord 30 is the latest in Orange's run of meticulously designed pin drop perfect amplifiers. Visit orangeamps.com/tremlord for a detailed overview, sound samples, and links to dealers worldwide.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi.
And Matthew Knight.
Good.
Oh, you sucked the fun right out of that. I thought that was a fantastic intro.
Jay,
what you guys didn't hear is there was wonderful ye olde music behind it and everything. Yeah.
No, there wasn't.
Well, there is in the future, Jay.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm quite into that kind of, you know, non-linear podcasting.
Yeah, yeah, that's how we. How yeah. we
Joe, are. if people listen to that at like double speed, do you sound young?
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe, okay. Maybe it works like the Face App sort of thing.
I don't want to know what you can get up to with the Face App.
Anyway, we are Mark Packhamless this week. Mark Packham's on the holiday somewhere.
Is he? Wasn't he on holiday like two weeks ago?
No. I don't know where he's gone. I think he's gone somewhere relaxing and hot, something like that. I've been pestering him sort of every day for the last few days because Reverb hasn't paid out to me for something I sold. And so I've been annoying him. And he keeps just replying to me that he's on holiday. And I won't accept that. I won't accept that as an answer. So I'm hoping something will get sorted soon anyway. But he
was just telling me about someone who was giving me a load of grief because they were complaining about the fact that they hadn't been paid out yet.
Yeah, that
I didn't realise it was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in Cornwall.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's quite a decent distance out of his flat for Mark Packham to travel. Really.
Well, yeah, totally, totally. He was complaining about the fact that he had to take 6 trains or something, and it's like, okay, well, you know. That's what happens when you refuse to learn how to drive. Like, it's, you know, it is
funny though that 3 of the 4 guitar nerds can't drive.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people.
When
I
you
know,
say funny, do you mean irritating for me? Because no, I mean, that's also true.
It's great for us. I really, the problem, if I learned to drive, I would have to drink less. There would be a situation where I wasn't being taken home.
Yeah, totally.
So I just I was never going to have that taken away from me. That sounds like madness, especially when I've got you, Jay. And,
yeah, that's good. I especially like when you arrange for us to go and do stuff and we have to be places really early.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh yeah, we're going to Birmingham today. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I guess I'll leave the house at 5:30. Shall I? Oh yeah, cool. Okay, good. You know, it's always that sort of stuff. It's always fun.
Yes. Well, I apologize. Anyway,
you don't have to apologize. It's fine. I wouldn't accept it even if you did.
That sounds reasonable. Anyway, okay. we've got Matthew Knight back because you were we obviously last week we did our Summer NAMM special.
I was actually back last Monday.
Summer NAMM. I can't believe we've never used that as a jingle.
That would be a great one.
A little sing song.
Yeah.
I was too busy listening to Kid Rock in his new bar.
In his bar. Is it on the main strip?
It's on, because you've been,
Broadway?
Right? So,
what's it called?
Yeah, Broadway. So yeah. There was a bar there last year, which is obviously closed, and then it's reopened. It's like this, Kid Rock's Honky Tonk. It's 5 floors, includes a full steak bar, and every time I walk past it, be it 10 in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning, there was music playing. It literally never stopped. And every time I went past, the band downstairs was playing Kid Rock.
Really? Was it just American Badass on loop? Is it just a bar?
They were actually playing American Badass a little bit. I was like, oh man. And all the people were just loving it. I'm like, oh God.
Are you scared?
Sounds like the worst place on earth.
I witnessed a rather... because obviously, for people who haven't been, Broadway is like this huge street that's got a bar. Well, every stop is a bar. I think apart from one shop that sells boots, that had a crazy promo that was like, buy one pair of boots, get 2 for free.
I'm get like, 5 what? Beers.
What? Buy one, get 2 free. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, so there are all these bars, and most of them are multiple floors. And we were walking past one of the bars, I think about 1:30 in the morning. And all the windows are open because it's crazy hot. So, you know, it's like 34 degrees. And guy was playing like an AC-30 and he had it backed right up to the window, obviously to like try and cool it down in some way. And some guy drunk sat on the window. We were standing there watching the band. And then some guy just turned the amp down and ran off. And obviously it cut the guy.
That is fantastic.
And the singer turned around to me and was like, hey, F you, man, put his middle finger up to me. And I was like, it wasn't me, it was this dude. Pointed to this dude like running down the road, and the guitarist took his guitar off, flew out the window and like chased after him. And then they were like, hey, man, don't touch our stuff. I was like, I didn't do anything. I was just watching the hilarity of some guy just turning this guy's cranked AC-30 like, while they did a cover of Jimmy Eat World. I was like,
my goodness.
Yeah, that's the fun. But, you know, loads of crazy bands. We went to the Gibson evening.
The Gibson party.
Yeah, Chris Isaac did Wicked Game. I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, that is excellent. That is everything you've ever wanted.
And then he played another song, and I was like, this isn't Wicked Game.
He has other songs.
And then loads of people did a cover. And then everyone who played that night got on stage and did Free Falling, including JC, the Gibson CEO.
JC Curley.
Yeah. Got on stage and sang Free Falling with everyone. It was very weird.
It really sounds weird.
Yeah. It was, there was loads of people there. It was quite good. Stood next to Joe Bonamassa for a bit.
Did he remember you?
No. I didn't actually go up to him. I just sort of was about 2 feet away from him. But yeah, that was quite good. I mean, Summer NAMM is a much smaller show than Winter NAMM. And as I was saying to you earlier, Joe, I actually think the best thing to do is walk around it every day for about an hour, because then you see something different every time rather than just like try and do every stall in one day.
Yeah, because you eventually get knackered and you don't want to stay at any one stand for too long because you don't want to miss something.
Yeah,
yeah.
And actually,
it sounds like a better way of doing it.
Half of the show this year, Gibson was like the middle point. So we had Gibson were there. They had the biggest stand. They had music literally all day. Loads of people on there. in front of that was Hal Leonard, and they were like the middle ground. And then every side, everything to the left side of Gibson was like Pro Audio, and everything to the right side, which started with us, was guitars, basically.
How did Gibson compare to... Because obviously this isn't their first NAMM since being back. They did this year's Winter NAMM as well.
And Summer NAMM last year.
Did they do the Summer NAMM as well?
They did, but they had a very small booth on Summer NAMM.
Yeah, it was a small stuff. And even on their Winter NAMM booth, it was very much like it was some trestle tables with guitars on it. There were a lot of them, but it looked more like a second-hand sort of boot fair than it did a Gibson stand.
At Winter NAMM?
Yeah, at Winter NAMM.
I didn't go to their booth at Winter NAMM this year because I didn't get a chance. But their Summer NAMM booth was incredible. They had this massive high def, like color screen, like playing loads of images and videos. They had a bunch of guitars on the tables again on black cloth. They had pretty much every guitar they make, including all the Kramers. They had guys in the middle building guitars. They had some sort of guy doing like these crazy carved tops in the middle. They had a big stage at the back, which was all bands like all day. They had a cool backstage area where they had every model of guitar up against like in its own like cubby whole sort of thing that had like images behind it. It was a huge stand as well. It was probably like 60
foot long. Was it the biggest one there?
Oh, it was like three times the size of any other booth there. It was, they came in hard at Summer NAMM this time. They were like really going for it. And the booth was really busy, like really busy, non-stop. There must have been at least 100 to 150 people on the booth at all times from the moment it opened to the moment it closed.
So despite all the whiny internet hate, everyone was still at the Gibson stand. Well,
and at the Gibson party. There must have been 1,000 people at that Gibson party.
Wow.
The next day, it's just like people love Gibson.
Well, they're great guitars.
Yeah. And they were playing it through great amps, so, you know, it's great.
Oh, yes, that's right. Was it? You gave that every single Gibson was going through a Boss Katana.
That was true, yes.
Oh, What a pairing, yeah. Oh, I want them to bring back their own amps. That's what I want. Some cool old Gibson amps.
The GA5?
Yeah.
Is it the GA5?
I don't know. I think it was. Something like that.
Epiphone Valve Junior.
The Valve Junior, classic. Oh,
the ultimate modding amplifier.
Because they did a stack, didn't they? They did the Valve Junior stack for a little while, which was quite cool. It was 2 110s and a head, I think.
Oh, yeah. And they did a full size, didn't they? They did like a 40-watt.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Yeah,
which
they weren't as good. I think the little ones were the better ones.
Yeah. It was a booty camp head before booty camp heads existed.
Yeah. Sort of.
So, NAMM. I want to hear about your highlights from NAMM.
Yeah.
But before we hear about your highlights, you posted a picture in the Guitar Nerds Facebook group of something that you picked up at NAMM. A new guitar.
Yeah, so actually this arrived the day after I think I came back from NAMM, actually. So it's quite a nice welcome home gift. And actually this was... this sort of all came about from Fuzz Guitar Show, which I spoke about a few months ago in Gothenburg in Sweden. I sat down for lunch with one of the guys, Clemens Huber, no relation to Nick Huber of Nick Huber Guitars.
That's ridiculous.
I know, it's crazy. So Nick Huber Guitars are a German, very small German guitar company that debuted
their first... Is Huber a popular German name?
Huber.
Yeah. Well, for two guys to work for the same company, but not be related.
Yeah, I don't know. I will find out.
Approximately 0.3% of the population.
Well, there you go.
That. Well, then this is an incredibly...
That's like 3 in 1,000 people.
Yeah, there's good chances there. I like those odds. Anyway, so yeah, so we started talking about Nick Huber guitars, and they were actually on display.
Not on the Wikipedia page under notable Hubers I should announce.
We should change that.
Yeah.
We should change that after this conversation. I'll speak to the team and be like, why aren't you on Wikipedia? That's where everyone gets their information, including guitars. So they were on display as part of the store These Go to 11. And we started talking about guitars. And I was like, I've heard of you. And, you know, I've seen a couple of their guitar models before. And, you don't see many of them in the UK, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm sure I've never seen a pink one. And we went on to talking about pink guitars and how they definitely should make more in pink and scrap every other colour and just, you know, pink guitars are the best. And we were talking about guitar nerds and stuff like that. And we sort of exchanged business cards. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got a message being like, oh, here's this pink guitar we've decided to build in, like, your honour sort of thing. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he's like, oh, you know, what sort of specs should it have? And I'm like, oh, it'd be cool if it was this and this and this. And then this conversation sort of rolled on until the point where the guitar sort of showed up at my door the day I came back from NAMM. And I should actually put the record straight because I don't actually properly own this guitar. It's on loan to me at the moment with I'm currently deciding whether I should or shouldn't own this guitar.
Well, there's a question for the listeners. facebook.com/guitar nerds forum. Should Matthew Knight buy the pink?
Well, the thing is, if I have to, just because of the cost, and obviously they did do me a little bit of a deal, it means
but they are very expensive
sell,
guitars. They're $3,500 guitars, so even with a deal.
Well, pretty much everything they make is made to order, and it's like a custom spec. Almost every body shape they have or type of guitar they have has their general spec, but you can customize so much of it for the store. So the guitar they sent me was the Nick Huber Krautster 2, which is their kind of, I guess it's like almost like a homage to a Les Paul Junior in a way, because it's like flat top with one humbucker and then the non-adjustable stop tail bridge, but it's got a P90 in the neck, single volume, single tone. But what is really interesting, and I was talking to Joe about this earlier, is it's a mixture of four different woods. So it's a cedar body with a maple top, with a mahogany neck, and an ebony fretboard.
And what's the binding on it? Because it's a wood binding.
Well, the interesting thing is the binding is actually the unfinished maple top.
Ah.
So what they do is they mask it off, and then they finish the top, and then they reveal
so it's not,
just...
it's not it's, binding.
It's not binding.
That's
it's
cool.
The maple
I like
top.
That.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, so, you know, I'm sort of weighing this up against the 58 that I have. And this feels, I mean, there's only four builders at Nick Huber Guitars. And this feels so much more personal and it feels so much more hands-on. It feels like it wasn't just churned out in a factory. And the Gibson sort of doesn't feel like that, but it does feel like a lot of other good.
They're very, very different in a sense that your Les Paul is, well, whilst it's, you know, a gorgeous, you know, Gibson custom in ocean pink, it's still everything about it is a Les Paul. So it's a Les Paul neck profile, gloss neck, you know, the body weight is Les Paul. Whereas the Nick Huber is designed to be a new guitar, so they're not weighed down by any past decisions like a Les Paul is or a Tele is or a Strat is. It's so things like the contoured heel, that it has a gorgeous, the neck is mahogany but it's so unfinished, it's like you can that you can feel the grain as you're running your hand down. It's so smooth.
That's the funny thing is going back to, because obviously I've got a few, you know, lucky enough to have a few different guitars, and I was sort of haven't played the Les Paul for a bit, and I was going back to it, and with that painted neck versus when you're so used to playing an unfinished neck, it really does feel quite different, especially in this heat as well. It feels way more sticky to play like a fully like nitro neck.
Yeah.
But even though they're both nitro, this feels and breathes a little bit more than the Les Paul, but it's nice because you can, if you want, you can
incredible weight as well.
Yeah, well, that's the cedar body. I'm sure it weighs less than my Japanese Strat. It can't be more than sort of 7.5 pounds, I think.
That's outrageously light.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a thinner body, and it's obviously not a carved top like a Les Paul. But I think the closest, the only real resemblance to a Les Paul is the fact that it's probably that single cut body shape.
Yeah,
everything else about it isn't very Les Paul at all. But they actually make an incredible range of guitars, and I like some of them. I don't like some of the other ones, but the things like the krauts do are really cool because they kind of give you that vintage feel, but they've obviously got a lot more thought into being an instrument in their own right. But they actually make a really cool guitar called the Surfmeister, which is worth checking out, which is a very similar body shape, but it's hollow with two TV Jones in it.
No, oh, now you're talking. More like a sort of a Doug Cower style.
Yeah,
thing.
So it's kind of that Cower thing. Because I was actually thinking about the... Is it Titan?
Yeah,
is
Titan are the affordable Cower.
Yes, they sort of remind me of that. And they obviously do a couple of more... like Les Paul style guitars. They do one called the Orca. They do a guitar called the Twangmeister, which is like a single cut carved top with two P90s and a single coil, but with like a Tele plate. So they do a range of like really fancy like flame top guitars that go that start at like $5,000 or $6,000, and then these ones start at like I think about $3,900.
Yeah,
and I mean, which is
I love
bad
that they do a mix of traditional instruments and sort of super modern. Like there is something for everyone, it's, you know, provided you like, you know, glue neck guitars.
And I really love the bass they make as well.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, oh, fantastic, gorgeous, short scale, oversized body, hollow, single cut, like arch top. Just one massive soap bar in the middle, and the Nick Huber headstock looks fantastic. So when you stretch it to make it into a bass headstock, it looks like even better. Like it's a fantastic guitar.
Yeah,
I would absolutely play one of those. You know, if they didn't obviously come with the sort of $3,500 price tag.
Yeah, this is the thing. They're such a small team, and it feels like someone built it from start to finish, and that's what I really like about it. There's like a real connection with like how it was built and kind of who built it. It also smells fantastic.
Oh, it does. It's got that proper gorgeous nitro smell.
Yeah, that brand new nitro smell, which I miss from working in a guitar shop. When you open up a guitar for the first time, you're like, ah. The awesome smell of nitro.
So just to interrupt very briefly.
Yes.
You earlier on we were texting between the three of us and just working out what time we were going to start podcasting, and Joe said, oh, I'm just on my way back from Matt's. And when I said, oh cool, what have you been up to, you came back with, oh, you know, taking photos, like looking at new stuff, maybe doing some videos. Actually what you meant was you were sniffing Matt's stuff.
I was sniffing his guitar.
Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. That's, you were sniffing that's stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but just guitars.
Oh, okay, just guitars. Yeah. No, don't worry.
No solvents. Just no. Well,
That's enough of that. We go.
Anyways, that's the Nick Huber. What an incredible instrument. And I think, yeah, definitely something to think about. It's a lot of dosh, and I think maybe you would have to sell one of your other guitars. What other guitars you've got to choose from? You've got the Japanese 80s Stratocaster. You've got a choice of the your ocean pink Gibson Custom Shop Les Paul. You've got your... Music Man Valentine. You've got the Charvel DK24 in shell pink. Then I guess on the ones where, you know, it wouldn't certainly make back the whole amount, but it would help towards it, you've got a Baja Telecaster.
That would definitely worth no money now. Yeah, totally modded that.
Yeah, it's pretty wrecked. And you've got your ultimately modded SG as well, which I think you should always keep. I actually played most of your guitars today, and I still think that SG is the best thing you own.
It is great.
It's incredible.
And actually, I guess, I don't know if you talked about it last week or not, but whether you talked about the new Charvel DKs that they had on display.
So we didn't actually. We didn't get round to talking about the new Charvels. Did you get to go and see them?
I saw them. So every day my colleague was like, you've got to go over to the Charvel booth and you've got to check out the Charvels. Oh, the blue one's amazing. And I didn't get a chance. And then on the last day, the show had closed. And I went over and went, look, really sorry. They put like the banner up. I was like, can I just be that person? It's like, I actually work for another brand. I just didn't get a chance to leave the booth. I hear you've got to check out one of these guitars. And the product manager came out and bought both the Burgundy Mist and the Frost Ice Blue. Is that the colour?
Matte Blue Frost.
Matte Blue Frost. Yeah. And I've got to say, they are absolute spec-wise... I actually think they blow the pink one out of the water in terms of what you can do with the humbuckers and the switching and everything. I was like, that is a cool guitar. And the Burgundy Mist looks
because they're all HH,
fantastic.
Right? So they're not HSH or
yeah,
HSS,
they're HH,
like the
but they've
ones.
Got they've got a five-way selector with an extra switch that like switches it into like almost like single coil mode, but it's not a coil tap. And then gives you like a bunch of Strat sounds and Tele sounds and the humbucker as well. I was like, spec-wise, I think they're incredible. It's obviously the same as the DK. I just thought that the wiring on it was just like, oh, that's like a step up in terms of versatility.
So just to clarify what you're saying with the pickup selector, so you've got bridge. So position one is bridge. Position two is both outer coils. Position three is bridge and neck together. Position four is both inside coils. And then position five is just the neck pickup. And then you've got the two-way control, the mini toggle, which allows you to decide whether you're having them in series or in parallel.
Nice.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, a lot to remember, but...
So basically it's a Baha Telly, is what we're saying there.
Yeah. but yeah, those colours, oh man...
The blue looks amazing. I've never been a big fan of Burgundy Mist, but I think the blue looks amazing. I do wish that I mean I really hate to sound like a stuck record here, but I do wish that the HH was available in Shell Pink, because I think I agree, Matt. I think the HH is a cooler guitar.
I got to be honest. I'm like, I saw it and was like, oh, I sort of wish I hadn't bought the pink one. And it's not a colour thing. I think it's actually just a spec thing, having those two humbuckers. I'm like, that, to me, I was like, that is really what I should have had the first time round. I think both look amazing. And same price, I guess. They're 1300 MAP, I think, aren't they? Something similar like that. So,
Very cool indeed.
Amazing, yeah.
Now, you obviously didn't go away to Summernam and not buy at least some things. So let's talk about the things that you bought.
Yeah, so I'll go very quickly because we have covered these bits before. But yes, I was talking to a new friend of mine, a chap named Paul, who does a lot of the MIDI programming for a bunch of different companies out there, Disaster Aero Designs, Chase Bliss, and... He obviously knows the guys really well, and he hooked me up with a awesome price on a Mood and a Tonal Recall Red Knob mod, which is their kind of souped up version of their Tonal Recall delay. And I bought a couple of MIDI controllers for them as well, but the Mood and the Tonal Recall are amazing. I had a little bit of time to play with the Mood today, and it is just like such a creative inspiration machine for like ambient stuff. It's so good. I can see why everyone's sort of gone a bit nuts over it.
Well, we did obviously cover it a bit on the podcast, but yeah, I mean, crikey, I really think the Mood is a very strong contender for Gear of the Year this year.
It's a really cool pedal. I mean, again, I don't know if it's one of those sort of like, I wouldn't say flash in the pan, because obviously Chase Bliss has been very popular, and even Chase Bliss came out and said, look, I think it's one of our most popular releases ever. Obviously, the big news from them as well is they're discontinuing the wooden box.
So you got some of the last two in boxes.
I got one of the last ones in wooden boxes, which was really nice. So yeah, they're discontinuing the wooden box. And I just think there's so much in it, and I think it's really nice that they've taken in two other companies to program most of it. Like Joel from Chase Bliss said, this was his most hands-off project. And I think that's really kind of opened them up as a company that maybe they'll do more collaborations like that in the future. The Tonal Recall's amazing. It's like an incredible analog delay. And what I love about it is obviously that it's digitally controlled. So you get a whole bunch of stuff with MIDI, which is amazing. Because I always find that's the thing. I love... my Deluxe Memory Man, and I can get similar sounds out of this, but I can save a bunch of different presets, and that's obviously great when you're using a MIDI switcher. And I bought a couple of bits from Disaster Area Design, so I bought their little MIDI box, which allows you to interface MIDI with Chase Bliss pedals, but also their new little pedal called the MIDI Baby, and it's basically a small of...
And what colour did you get the MIDI Baby in?
Hot pink, obviously. It's the same size as that AWOL FX booster. So yeah, like
the square pedal.
Yeah, basically as small as you can possibly get when you put a jack on a pedal and that's it. But it's got a USB out. You've got an online computer editor, and then you can program it for three different MIDI commands, depending on whether you instantly press it, hold it for one set amount of time, and hold it for a second set amount of time. So you can program this thing to do something like, I think it's like 300 MIDI messages on three different taps. So you can, like, one button will, like, totally change your entire rig. So it's actually, like, programmed to be a kind of one button changes everything kind of thing for, like, going to a crazy sound or going to a completely crazy setup or something like that on your pedal board. So for $99, I was like, this is one of the coolest programmable devices I've ever used. So I'm looking forward to sort of diving into that and doing some sort of weird
saying
stuff
something from Matthew Knight.
Yeah, I was really into it. I thought, and they had a cool stand. They built like 16 of these MIDI babies on like a clear plastic board, and then they've got loads of different coloured LEDs, and it was doing all sort of fancy light show. And I was like, oh, light show, I'm in. that wasn't the only reason I bought it.
Sure. Now, you told me about this next product earlier, and it's something that that you know, I think Jay will be excited about because it is, of course, technically an accessory.
You know how much Jay loves accessories.
Well, you know how... Do you remember years ago, Jay, when if you wanted a good strap, Levis were the strap company to go to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, now it's Fender, but then it was Levis, yeah.
that's what I'm saying. Years ago, it was...
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their incredible new Neo 250 copperback speakers. Sacrificing none of the delicious musicality of your favorite Celestians, the Neo 250 copperback is a neodymium speaker that supplies tons of tone without the signature cone breakup immediately associated with the classic Celestion growl. Rated at a monstrous 250 watts, the Neo 250 works together with your amp to provide fantastic dynamics, delivering all the headroom and touch sensitivity you could possibly need. All that at a modest £5, which is, that's like 2.2 kilograms. Check them out at Lean Business in the UK, TubeAmp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Eberloud in Spain, plus gear for Music Toman and Backstrop. And if you're in the US, then you've got retailers like Sweetwater, Musician's Friend AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course Amazon. For more details, check them out, celestian.com.
I'm actually, you know, getting to a point quite like that, but now there's so much competition for Levis. You know, like Gibson do those great big thick padded straps, Fender have a massive line of great straps, Boss have just introduced some really good sort of rugged both retro and modern straps, Mono, a mainstream strap company who are offering options for, you know, for vegan straps, which is fantastic, and of course there are a ton of great boutique strap companies out there. Levis, they needed to do something. So what did they do, Matt?
So, and Jay, you are going to like this because it is ridiculous. So I was at the Breakfast of Champions at Summerham, which is the award show, and Levis won an award for their new trademarked and painted right height line of straps featuring ripcord technology, which is basically an adjustable strap, but instead of, you know, having to take your guitar off and then you've got the little bit and you've got to like feed some strap through or pull it tight or make it shorter, this has got a little ripcord that comes off the back that you pull down once to lengthen it and then you pull it again to shorten it. It was absolutely genius. I was like, don't even take your guitar off, you just reach around, pull the little ripcord, and then there you go.
That is very smart. Yeah.
I'm concerned about, like, you know, pulling it once and it loosens it and it sort of goes like a ripcord.
No, because it was quite smooth in terms of the action.
Right.
But yeah, and actually, I think they were saying that Gator is now part. Levis is now part of the Gator family.
Oh, really?
And they've bought the person who did Soldier Boy. straps onto redesign the entire Levi's product range. So they're currently redesigning all of their straps, bags, and accessories.
So a while ago, we got sent like a Diodario pack of stuff, of things, you know. And one of the things was their double shoulder strap.
the ultimate. The squid.
Well, not the squid.
Never the squid.
You wear it over both shoulders and then.
Like a backpack.
But for a front guitar.
Like a front pack.
For your guitar, yeah. So you've got it going over both shoulders, but both of them are, both the bits on the shoulder are going to the, to the top.
What I want to know about the double strap guitar strap is, can you just wear your guitar like a backpack now? Can you put it on backwards and just, like, you know, go shopping? I'm going for a walk and I want people to see that I play guitar, so I'm gonna like, I'm going to wear it like a fashion accessory.
What you need is a see-through gig bag.
You just got... Oh, yes. That's actually a great idea.
There's of see-through gig bags, yeah.
So there's like a whole...
God, that is a good idea.
Yeah, it really is. There's a whole kind of change of... I'm just going sports for just a moment. Like, loads of football stadiums at the moment aren't letting you in. And actually, it's bigger in America, but they're not letting you into sports stadiums unless you've got a see-through backpack. Like, that's the only bag they'll allow in.
Wow,
so
cool.
Yeah,
I think
maybe
talk about see-through kits.
Yeah, see-through kits. Yeah. So the emperor from The Emperor's New Clothes has just started sponsoring Sheffield United, who's just come up to the Premier League, and yeah, they're wearing the Emperor's new kit. Yeah,
a Sheffield United back in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Oh, good
the
for
Blades.
Them.
Oh. Anyway, that's enough about sports. People have turned off. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's it.
I always preferred Sheffield Wednesday.
Careful there, mate. Careful.
I just thought Wednesday was a fantastic suffix for a...
It's just a great day.
For a football team.
It's
a great day.
It's
the middle of the week. Why not Friday? You know, Sheffield Friday night. That sounds
Sheffield
great.
Sheffield Friday night. I don't know. Don't know how good a Friday night is in Sheffield.
Do you know, Sheffield Wednesday is actually just called Sheffield Wednesday because... they played football on a Wednesday. That's literally where the name came from.
Wow.
I love it.
Anyway.
So, yeah. So that was Levi's straps, Levi straps.
Yeah.
But very cool. I thought that was very good. And they've actually, like, yeah, totally, like, trademarked the technology. Like, no one can steal this now. So, yeah, I actually thought that was a cool accessory. I thought Jay might be pleased.
Were you saying that it was the first strap to ever be patented?
Yep.
Wow. There you go. Levi's.
That's not true.
Is it not?
I don't think so. I mean, there's certainly at least one strap, like, line that we do that's patented technology. So, don't know.
Oh.
The Fender does, sorry, yeah.
We'll have to do more research.
Could
be on trademarks. And
maybe they got there first.
Maybe. Who knows?
Let's talk about some more stuff. Let's talk about a guitar brand now. We've done an effect and an accessory. Let's talk about Revolta guitars.
Yeah. So a friend of the podcast, Wesley Steed, ex-GAK employee, ex-guitar employee, moved to Nashville.
And, you missed after he was guitar, then GAK, then Peach.
Actually,
forget.
He was guitar. Oh, yeah. He was GAK. And then guitar, and then GAK.
And then Peach. Yeah. He's worked literally everywhere. In fact, he did...
And he builds guitars as well.
He does build guitars. And he did a podcast episode with me once as well.
Did he?
Yeah, on the GAK podcast.
Is that after we'd left?
Okay, fine. Very well.
And then he actually, me and him went on a Gibson buying trip when we worked for two different dealers to Nashville, where he now met his now current wife. Yeah. And he moved to Nashville and he just got a job at Revolta Guitars, which is also part of Novo Guitars, which are the Dennis Faino designed instruments. So Revolta Guitars are designed by Dennis Faino, built in I'm going to say, because I've forgotten, I'm pretty sure he said Indonesia or Korea, but they're built in the same factory as Italia and... What's the other brand? Italia and Reverend, built in the same factory.
They're marketed on the Eastwood website.
Yes, I think they're part of the Eastwood distribution network. I think in parts of it, I can't remember the full story. Maybe we need to get Wes on here and have a chat about them in full, because they had an awesome range of guitars, but they announced their Mondata Baritone 7, which was amazing. I think there's a huge... We were talking about it. There's a great range of like companies coming out with alternative baritones now, which I really like. Baritones that aren't metal guitars, basically.
So this Baritone 7 is not a seven-string baritone.
No, it's just part of their naming system.
Right.
There's a lot of Roman numerals involved. But it's a chambered mahogany body with a German carve. We know how much we love a German carve, with a raised center block. Double-bound, set maple neck, bound fingerboard, perloid inlays, 28-inch scale.
Very much a retro guitar, a sort of offset. Oh, yeah. That sort of surfy, sharp-edged offset. Kind of thing.
With a nice sort of Gibson Tunematic style bridge, and that was just amazing. It sounded great. It had it's P90 in the neck, humbucker in the bridge. And yeah, I think, again, if you want to go baritone, but you don't want something that's, you know, metal, as it were, it was well worth checking out. Their new bass was really cool as well. And I was actually just super impressed. It was really nice to see stuff from Faino. One of the only guitars, actual Fainos, I've ever seen is that one we actually had in second hand in GAC before. And then obviously we spoke about him before, and he sort of disappeared and left the sort of Faino range. And it's nice to see him redesigning guitars. They had, was there a bass 6 as well, I think? Or just a normal 6-string with like 3 mini humbuckers and a Bigsby. They do a range of cool colours. So yeah, I was definitely worth checking out.
They're very cool. The Combinata 1 is definitely my favourite single. It's that sort of Novo Faino sort of shape, which is, you know, I have no idea how to describe it. A really oversized, angular sort of 60s surfy thing, and they've done it with just a wraparound bridge and a single P90. In the bridge, in cream with a black plate, so it kind of looks like a Les Paul Junior, but in this Revolta style.
Yeah.
Oh, and they do gorgeous.
The Combinata, which they call the set. Well, the Roman numerals is XV11, which would be 17. Has got a Duesenberg trem on it, which is actually the nicest trem system I think I've used. It's sort of halfway between a Strat trem and a Bigsby. It's kind of really nice and fluid, but it's kind of got a bit more movement to a Bigsby, and it feels a lot more stable as well.
That looks a bit like the Rickenbacker, the John Lennon Rickenbacker. What's that, the 328 or something?
Oh.
What's the...
Yeah, the Onion.
Yeah, the Onion. Is that the 328?
I'm going to have a look. I'm pretty sure
328
it's
C58?
No, there was the 650. Was it the 650?
No, it's not one thing.
No, because the 650 is the slightly weird top horn, isn't it? I know which one you mean. I'm sure it's 328 or something.
But maybe I'm incorrect. I can't remember. Or 328.
If anyone knows, post it in the group. But yeah, what we lovingly referred to as the Onion. It was a very, very weird guitar. And it was also very expensive.
325, sorry.
Yes, very similar to that. It's actually, the Combinata is actually based off, they say here, original inspiration from the 1954 combo model electric guitar. And he created a prototype of that in 2006 and have sort of refined it since then. But yeah, a great range of cool guitars. Novo guitars are actually all built in the USA in Nashville, which is quite cool. So again, similar design. By Faino, but all built in the US, and they have some very, very cool guitars. I think the Cirrus T is their kind of P90 with a single coil in the bridge. It's sort of that single cut with like a sharp lower horn. They are very, very cool guitars. Very, very cool guitars.
Awesome. Now, you also went over and saw one of our favourite pedal companies, Old Blood Noise Endeavours, who we didn't speak about there. We didn't get around to their new release either on our NAMM special.
I guess it's a bit of a weird one because it's not a guitar effect, but it was quite cool to actually go and see everything they had. It was really nice to see the little expression controllers they make in person and talk to one of the engineers, and we were showing some stuff, and they had a mood on display, and I said, oh, you know, great job designing the mood. I think it's, from what I've heard, it sounds amazing.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
They were actually showing a prototype of what they call the Moor, which is their vocal processor. So it's a multi-effects for vocalists. But what's cool is it's got a mic preamp in it, so you can saturate your vocals. It's got a bunch of different effects in it. They said it was still a little way off being finished because there was, you know, like knob design and layout they still hadn't fixed. But they've really wanted to offer something for vocalists because they were like, so often he's like, I'm a singer, and you know, so often I just get told I'm not a musician because I'm a vocalist. And he's like, no, I really want to show off, you know, what I can do on vocal and the option to use a bunch of pedals as well. So yeah, XLR in, inbuilt preamp, foot switchable saturation, two different sets of effects. It was a really, really cool thing.
That's a really great idea. Of course, yeah, definitely vocalists get stuck with that one because unless I know Boss do one and TC Helicon do their multi-effects as well. But outside of those, and they're designed for singers. They're like, here's a ton of reverb. Like, there's nothing weird. It's very difficult to do anything weird with those.
This is obviously aimed at the vocalists that play in bands who also play their pedals.
Yeah.
You know, so I was really into it. I thought that was really cool. I think the great thing is as well, as they say that it's you know, it's not just for microphones, it's for mic'd instruments as well.
So, that's very cool.
So, you know, if you're mic'ing up a guitar, you could use it in the studio for processing a mic'd guitar, for example.
This is calling out for Joe Branton to add a bit of kazoo to the next Polymath record.
I think maybe have it through the microphone
any
for the podcast.
Yeah. I'm like a shaker.
Yeah, you just add it in post. No, I absolutely love
no,
the idea.
Live.
No, okay,
smash
live.
On, smash on the saturation, bit of reverb and flanger.
I absolutely love the idea that Joe and Polymath show up to a show and they're like, oh yeah, how many mics do you need? How many mics do you need, fellas? Oh yeah, just three across the front. Okay, cool. Can we get a bit of a sound check? I'm just going to plug in my pedal. No. So I need a line without the pedal. No. We don't use it without the pedal. Just imagine you just kazooing straight in.
Well, I could definitely. I'm thinking more egg shaker. You know, like just playing an egg shaker, running it through loads of stuff. I'd be really, really.
How can you
up
play the
that?
Egg shaker when you're playing the bass? The thing about kazoos, you can do
no,
both at the
no,
same time.
I'd get rid of the bass. Get rid of the bass. I'd just have this.
You're just going to play.
custom shop egg
shaker.
Egg shaker
into an Old Blood Noise Endeavours more.
Well, a couple of times I've been to see this band called Brittany, and they have a bass player and a drummer, and then a guy who breathes into a microphone and runs it through a pedal board. He has a massive guitar pedal board on table.
I'm totally in.
And he just heavy breathes into it and then manipulates all the sound. They're very good.
That's bonkers.
Occasionally he screams, but you know, I can never work out if he's, you know, if it's supposed to be part of the show or not.
So at 1 year, in fact, at Reading in 2004, I want to say, I went to see, I was watching Green Day headlining the main stage, but they clashed with Mike Patton and Razel, who were doing a collab show in one of the smaller stages. So I watched like 45 minutes of Green Day, and then was like, right, I've got to go and see Mike Patton and Razel. It's going to be amazing. And it was Razel beatboxing and doing, you know, that thing that he did, which was beatboxing and singing at the same time. If your mother only knew. That one. And basically...
The only one.
That was like his thing. And Mike Patton was just yelling into delay pedals. And at the time, I was just like, this is awful. This is really terrible. Why have I left one of my favourite bands? I mean, bear in mind, I was... 16, I think, or maybe 17.
Oh no, yeah, that's far too young to appreciate 16. Someone yelling into a delay pedal.
And nowadays I'd be like, yeah, absolutely, I'm not going to go and watch Green Day. Actually, I'd probably still go watch Green Day, but I reckon if they did that again, I'd definitely consider not. But anyway, either way, I think it's a really cool idea for a pedal. Like you say, there aren't that many options for people who want to do like weird stuff. And what's cool about it, I mean, at least from the prototype that they've put together, is you've got a selector with five different effects, I think. So you've got you can assign two different effects to two foot switches, but there's five effects to choose from across the two. So yeah,
including reverse.
Oh, right. Cool.
Which would be a ton of fun.
That would be cool.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
A looper pedal afterwards, you could do some beatboxing, then reverse the beatboxing, and then, sky's the limit.
That's exactly what you want. Now, other than like all the big brands and some relatively mainstream stuff, there are, of course, loads of teeny weeny little brands, and you came across something that was actually kickstarting
itself. So there's a couple of cool things I want to talk about, but we'll talk about this Kickstarter really quick. So there was a guy who's basically although it does look like it's closed, I mean, we need to speak to him, but basically started an Indiegogo for something called the C99 from 3Degrees Audio. That was his company. He's a DSP engineer, and he's basically built a pocket multi-effects. And it was crazy. It had a tiny screen on it. It had two controls. It was it could be stereo in or stereo out via TRS cables, or you could do mono in, mono out. It had USB, and you could hook it up to, I think, an editor on the computer as well. And then it had two tiny foot switches. And the idea was it was just supposed to be a desktop effects processor that you could plug headphones straight into, or you could carry it around in your gig bag. But it was also like a USB audio device with MIDI. And then you could edit it via an HTML interface on a web editor. And he started an Indiegogo, basically. We'll have to put the link in the description, because the one that I found looks like it's closed, and it was running when I was at Summer NAMM. And
it was called the C99. So C99. Listeners, if you remember that, go check that out. It seems like a really super cool
product. There's actually two. I think he started one, obviously cancelled it, and released his new one, because this new one has a little screen. So you can actually edit everything from the screen. They are looking for $18,000. I think they were $225 each, but actually for the size, I thought it was wicked. Yeah, output into amps, which can run in stereo, you can run into monitors, you can output into your phone, 9-volt powered, guitar in, tiny little screen, multiple effects chains, multiple presets, HTML editing. I was like, wow. Oh, and it's got a bunch of impulse responses in it as well. So, yeah, through headphones, you can actually load in some Celestion IRs and have some proper impulse responses going into your headphones.
Well, they're included We should add.
So what was cool about that, and actually a great idea that Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum had for a lot of his videos, was that he was getting content at NAMM by running the guitar into his HX Stomp, which is obviously giving his amp model, and then out of that into his Zoom recorder. But obviously that's quite bulky. This, like, as a tiny little pocket multi-effects without modeling and IR loading, you could literally do that. Much better way to demo stuff at trade shows. Just guitar out of whatever you're going into that, and then into headphones. A much better sound. You get a much better idea. So I think actually just for like people using at home who want to just play with headphones, like totally gig bag worthy. I mean, the foot switch was not necessarily stompable to the max. It was like a little plastic button.
But actually, I
think the guys like got great ideas. I think it's a really, really cool project. It's definitely worth checking out. And we sort of wished him all the luck for the future, because he basically programmed the entire thing himself. And I was like, that is amazing. Yeah, it was a really cool little product, the C99.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I'll quickly run through a couple of the last few bits from NAMM that are definitely worth checking out. This one I think J Cross will also be into. This is a company called Brand New Noise, who also won a Best in Show award for Summer NAMM. And these guys make recorders, thumb pianos, and other tiny instruments with inbuilt loopers with outputs. So they make tiny little music makers, basically.
Yeah,
we've
seen these before. I think we've talked about these before.
I can't remember.
Have we?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. We've talked about these before. Because they do make... Sorry, Matty, I didn't mean to cut across you there.
That's right.
But they make a bunch of like really, really simple, really cool, music makers. I think the guy's like... He's maybe a teacher or something. He wanted to build something that his kids could play. I'm sure there's something along those lines.
So the story is, he built one for his nephew, five for his teachers, 10 for his first online store, and he's still building it.
I knew there was something along those lines, yeah.
But so, yeah, it's obviously it's been featured in a bunch of stuff. I think they're going to be sold in Selfridges now.
Oh, wow.
And the guy was just like, and I saw them, and that was the last booth I went to before the show closed. And I just went up to him and went, man, I think these are wicked. I definitely think they appeal to the guitar nerds audience and people who want to make stupid ambient noises. Like their little thumb piano with an inbuilt recorder and a jack out. And then it's just a control on the front to control the pitch. I'm like,
is that the Zoots?
These are the Zoots, yes.
Looks so good, man.
Yeah, and I actually saw today they make a tiny xylophone with a looper in it and an output jack. I'm like, oh, these things are amazing.
The one that I remember getting really excited about when I was looking at these was the Cranky, which is a
It's a tiny player piano.
Yeah,
isn't
it's a player piano, but if I remember correctly, you also get a bunch of blanks that you can make yourself.
Oh, cool.
I'm sure I remember hearing about that or seeing that on their website. They're so good. I totally forgotten about this company. They're so, so cool, man.
Yeah, I just think that anyone, I think, great Christmas present. I think just great thing to treat yourself with. I saw those and was like, this is wicked. Although the person who demonstrated it was like at the Best in Show. They weren't there. They sort of like... sort of very crudely sort of demonstrated, and I was like instantly like they went, yeah, it's got a looper in it. I was like, yes, and an output jack, and I was like, oh my god, I have to go and check this out. I was like, I can instantly see myself dropping the guitar and going thumb piano straight into my pedal board. It's like the less notes. I mean, this thing's only got six notes, even better. So yeah, I definitely think they're worth checking out. That's Brand New Noise Sound Gadgets. And let's talk about one more thing. I should probably talk about the last thing on this was Noatronic. And I also found out about this from the Best in Show Awards. And we went and checked this out on the booth. And I've got to say, how have we not spoke about these before? How's the guide not got more news out about this product? So how do I explain? This is a passive onboard expression pedal that replaces your guitar's tone pot. So you get a little tone pot in the pack. You get a TRS jack output that you replace on your guitar, and then you get the Noatronic expression receiver. And what it does is it transmits guitar data from your pickup to this pot out into the expression receiver and turns guitar notes or guitar, I would say movement from the guitar pot into expression. So that then can be sent out via MIDI. So for example, it's like a push-push pot. So he had it hooked up with an HX stomp, and every time when you clicked into preset mode, every twist of the knob, there were six positions, changed presets on the HX effects, and then hold it down and it goes into expression mode, and then it controlled. So he had a fuzz, for example, fuzz patch, and he's like, cool, now turn up the tone pot, engage the whammy. So you can use the tone pot for MIDI control, which he was then using to control the whammy. And I was like, that's amazing. And then he was like, oh, but it's also got analog expression out, and he had it hooked into the mix control of RV6. So when he turned up the tone pot, it did the whammy and increased the mix on the RV6.
What, for, and like, reverb swells? Yeah,
anything. So yeah. If you've got a delay pedal that's got delay time input on expression pedal, you go from this little Noatronics box into the pedal and it will control the delay time. So what you have to do is install this little passive tone pot, which has got a little circuit board on it, and then obviously you have to install the TRS jack. And as far as I was made aware on how the technology works, is what it does is send a bunch of pulses down the cable, and then the first thing your guitar goes into is the expression receiver, and then there's just a normal output that goes out into your normal chain of pedals. But what it does is it changes those little pulses into MIDI data or expression data via TRS. So you can effectively now control your effects, MIDI effects or analog effects, via the tone pot on your guitar. I thought it was totally bonkers. I thought it was an absolutely amazing product. And he includes a wiring diagram that effectively rewires your Strat to volume, master tone, and then the expression pedal. So I think right now, because obviously it's quite a new product, it only works with Strat style guitars.
This is outrageous.
But in terms of, like, as soon as he did the pitch with the HX effects, I was like, there's a bunch of people out there who will find this thing absolutely amazing. Because as soon as you go MIDI, you can control anything. So, and what was nice is the pot is actually notched in three positions. So if you're using it to control six different presets, you can feel where you need to turn it to get to the next preset. But the onboard expression thing for me, actually on the analog side of controlling, for example, the mix on the RV6, meant that you can do these amazing, huge reverb swells from your guitar.
That to me sounds like what was that weird ring that we would...
The hot hand.
Lordov.
That sounds like a more usable version of that.
Yes, because you don't have to wear a ring.
Yeah. Yes. basically, yeah.
But effectively, does the same. But what was crazy is that, obviously, I was like, as soon as he said, oh, you got to put something in guitar, that puts most people off. Yeah. And he's like, it's passive. So once it's fitted, that's it.
So how does it... What is it, a wireless transmitter or something?
No, it's... So as far as I can understand from the technology, and I asked a few people about how this kind of works, is that every time you move the pot, it sends a series of incredibly fast pulses from the pot to the jack, which is TRS. And those pulses are transmitted via the TRS jack and then received in this box.
So the box has to be first in your chain.
The box has to be first in chain. So what you do is you replace the... So that's why it only works for Strats at the moment, I think.
Okay.
So your Strat normal jack, which is obviously just mono TS, is replaced by a TRS jack. So rather than using a normal guitar lead, you use a TRS lead. You go into the box, and then the box has a guitar through, and then that goes into your pedal board.
Please bear in mind, I'm an idiot.
I am so far from understanding.
Okay, fine. So just so I'm clear, what you have to do here to get this to work is you have to replace the middle knob on your Strat.
Yes.
And you also have to replace the
jack.
Output jack.
Yes.
cool. And that's
and
it.
That's it.
Right. Okay.
And then you just go.
And you're only replacing the output jack because you need a stereo out rather than a mono out.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And then you just go into the box, which is also included in obviously the pack. And then it will instantly, the knob will instantly start transmitting either MIDI or analog data. You can tell it on the box what you want it to do. And then it's obviously just a case of programming it from there. But what it was just really interesting on, like, the concept of how this technology can work, what it can do, and how, what it could do for your guitar rig, potentially. And it was just one guy.
No, there's a kid with a motorbike who, when it gets past sort of 8 o'clock every night, he just drives his motorbike up and down the little cul-de-sac.
Oh, I have someone on my road
over and over and over again until about 11 p.m. Oh, it's so annoying. I'm gonna find him.
No, I'm into it. You should. You know what you should actually do? Sorry, Matty, but what you should actually do is you should buy a motorbike and start a gang.
Oh, that is quite a good idea. I've always wanted
with
to
him.
Yeah, with
him.
Yeah, no, against him. Yeah. This is my cul-de-sac, kid.
Between 8 and 12, I'll be riding my 10cc bike up and down here. But yeah, this product does look awesome. Noatronic.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. I'd love to just get one. And thing is, I don't really have a guitar that I can sort of really butcher for it, in a sense. Well, not butcher, but I don't really want to take it out of my sort of Paisley Strat.
80s Paisley Strat. You'd have to buy a new Strat.
If only there was someone who could, like,
buy a cheap one. Mod mode. But I definitely think this would be worth checking out. I reckon as soon as we post this in Guitar Nerds Working, people are going to absolutely lose it.
It's very cool.
The first time I saw it demoed, I was like, genius. And the fact that it's passive, I was like, genius.
Yeah.
On your guitar, no battery. Totally. Because as soon as you lock someone into... I was sort of talking about this with, I think you guys maybe talked about it on the podcast or talked about it for that G-Rock guitar.
We didn't actually talk about it.
Oh, really? Should we quickly talk about it now?
Okay.
Let's talk about the G-Rock.
All right, let's go in very quickly. I saw this guitar, totally, totally bonkers. G-Rock or G-Rock, I'm trying to...
G-Rock, because it gyrates.
Ah, there we go.
The pickups gyrate, so it's G-Rock.
I'm actually trying to find their website. Can't.
Because they're down. part of Wild Guitars. Yeah, yeah.
They're what? Sorry?
It's because they're part of Wild Custom Guitars.
Oh, okay. So this guitar is basically a custom built, everything about it is custom built by them in their factory, that has two revolving barrels that allow you to change the guitar's pickup configuration, but not in just a wiring sense, physically change the guitar's pickups. So it's like a big wheel in both the neck and the bridge that comes with a range of different Seymour Duncan pickups that you can then effectively use two controls on the front to shift the wheel into different pickups.
I've just dropped the link in if you need it, Matt. I have got it.
Totally and utterly bananas.
Incredible.
It's all like aluminium, which they like. It comes from like a massive block. They all do it themselves. Everything's made themselves.
The pickups are Seymour Duncan at the moment.
Apart from the pickups, but that's the thing. So talking about being locked down to a system, you're locked into the Seymour Duncan pickups that they can use with it at the moment.
Well, at the moment, but they will release more, and they certainly give you it comes with a big set of pickups.
It does.
So you can get kind of every tone you could possibly need.
I mean, incredibly engineered, amazing, extremely expensive.
So yeah, they're $16,000, but the instruments themselves are incredible. The website is in fact very good, and it gives you lots of information. You can have a look at the full range of guitars. They only do the one body shape, which is a single cut Les Paul, sort of modern Les Paul kind of thing. Plenty of information on there about the system and how it works, via those two mechanical levers. It's very cool, and a range of really great colours that the guitar comes in as well. Yeah. They are all $16,000.
The only thing is as soon as you like, oh, we've got this amazing pickup system. Great. Seymour Duncan, load to them. Great. You have to use our guitar.
Well, yeah, but...
That's always the problem, I find.
What I heard on a podcast, I can't remember who was talking about it, was that you actually would be able to... Apparently, in theory, you can retrofit it. They're not offering it yet, but they're thinking about it. Do I understand that correctly?
They didn't mention that to me. I could see that would be possible. I mean, that bit of engineering is incredible.
It looked amazing. And the whole thing is magnetic. So you pop the pickups in and pop them out again. Yeah. And the back is magnetic, so it pops on and off really easily.
It's very similar to Relish guitars. Do you remember Relish guitars? They were the...
Super engineered, like Perspex back guitar.
Well, they're wooden front and back, but they're magnetic. Like the back is magnetic and the pickups in them are magnetic. And you can just pop everything off and pop a whole bunch of new stuff in. And it's got that crazy pickup selector that's touch. It's like a five-way touch sensitive selector.
Such a bad idea.
I mean, the thing is what you start to see from this, and you know, there's so many great builders out there, and I saw a bunch of them that, you know, we're not going to go into, and we saw a bunch at Winternam as well, of people actually really trying to reinvent the guitar. And again, the Boutique Guitars Showcase was there, and you just see some of the guitars that people are building, and you're like, man, people are like, you know, stepping outside the box when it comes to guitar builders. They had one on the boutique stand, and I can't remember if it was a Winternam or not. And I wish I could remember. I think I took a photo of it somewhere. I wish I could remember what brand it was. And it's like, it's a mahogany guitar. I think it was mahogany, where its display stand is also the slab of wood that it was built out of. So it's this huge slab of mahogany that's also the base of the stand that then the guitar body shape was cut out of. It was carved, and then the body is one whole solid piece.
Oh.
And it was something like $70,000, I think.
Ah! That's outrageous.
But it was like nothing had been taken off and re-glued or anything like that. It was all one piece. And the stand that it came with was the slab of wood that it was cut out of.
That must have been a really stressful build.
Yeah. I can't take anything off. Oh. I'll try and find it. Maybe I'll see if I can post the link in the Facebook group. But that was... bananas. But yeah, like I said, it's so many people just like going outside of the realms of what a guitar should be.
Thinking outside the Telecaster. Yeah.
So that was just a few of my favourite things.
Very cool. That is it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to continue over on the Patreon, where we're going to be taking a look at podcast listeners on the Facebook groups. The Guitar Nerds confession thread. We're going to have a bit of a butchers at that. Well, you can join us there for as little as $1 a month. You can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and more. And $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one breath by me. Ready?
You nearly didn't make it last time.
I know. Well, there haven't been any new 10 tiers.
Oh, well, that's quite interesting then, because what that suggests is either last week you were
this
good
should be easy.
Or last
that's
week
what
you were bad.
There were more $5 tiers this week, just no 10 tiers. Okay, here we go.
Miren Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Wax, Joshua Mitchell, Christopher Lund Hansen, John Pearson, John Mayer, Sully Benning, and Johnson Rumsack, Milton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric Pyle, Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Andlin, Adam Royce, Chris, Jake Cutmore, Robert Douthers, Rob Goose, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amador, Arnie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Dagan, Stephen Hunt, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emmy James Maker, Juan Troyer, Aaron Salmon, Blake Wyland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Hans Arms, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rod Norton, Duncan Watson, Ed Medley, Steve Markle, DJ Macross, Michael McRae, Connor Swanson, Andy McKenzie, Brad Rage, Blatton, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Will Corrigan, Will Clare, Moe Grammett, Will Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Kane, Sean O'Brien, Christopher Waltman, Robertson.
Oh,
I think I thought I had it at the start, and I was a bit, you know, more cash.
Classic,
and then I just
classic Branton arrogance.
I got myself, into a wee pickle. I've drank a little less than I normally do today, so I just figured I'd probably have more gusto, but I did not. That was not the case. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram at Twitter at GuitarNerds. Join us on Facebook. facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/guitarnerds. We'll catch you over on the Patreon. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.